Carl Jung, he had this famous quote, "People don't have ideas. Ideas have people." Just think about that for a minute. How many times have you had a breakthrough, maybe a solution at work, or, I don't know, a creative spark that didn't feel like you thought of it, like it just arrived?
Exactly. That feeling, that spark coming from outside, maybe in a dream or just a sudden flash. That's what we're diving into today. We've gathered a whole load of stories from, well, incredibly influential people across history. We're talking musicians, scientists, writers, tech innovators, all saying their best work kind of landed on them from somewhere else.
Okay, right. So let's dig in. This isn't just about, you know, the romantic idea of a muse floating around. We want to find the surprising facts, the patterns, and maybe some practical stuff in these accounts.
Yeah.
If ideas really do choose us, how can you, listening right now, get better at catching them? How can you be more receptive?
Well, first, you got to realize this isn't a new idea. Not at all. If you go back to the ancient Greeks and Romans, they didn't really give the artist all the credit. They believed inspiration came from outside forces, muses, or things called demons, which we sort of translate as genius spirits now.
Right. The genius wasn't the person. It was this external thing that worked through the person.
Precisely. And think about the psychological benefit there. It was actually pretty clever. If the work turned out brilliant, great, the genius gets the praise. But if it bombed, if it failed, well, you could blame the demon, the spirit. It protected the human artist's ego, you know, kept them willing to take risks to try again.
That's actually a brilliant coping mechanism. So it wasn't just mysticism. It was like early mental health for creators.
You could definitely see it that way. And Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, she talks about this exact idea still being useful today. She calls it a necessary psychological construct. It helps manage that crushing creative anxiety we heap on ourselves. She describes inspiration like this, peculiar, wondrous, bizarre collaboration with some kind of strange external thing. We still need that distance, it seems.
Okay, so let's get into the moments where that distance feels most real, when the idea just appears. Often when people are asleep or totally distracted, the music examples here are just wild.
Oh, absolutely. You have to start with Paul McCartney and Yesterday. It's maybe the most famous example.
The entire melody just came to him in a dream, fully formed. He was staying in an attic room in London.
And the crucial part, the really telling detail, is that he woke up and was instantly paranoid. He was convinced he must have heard it somewhere before because it sounded too perfect.
Yeah, he spent weeks playing it for people, asking, "Have you heard this? Is this already a song?" He said it felt like he was trying to hand it in to the police, worried he'd subconsciously plagiarized it.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it? The idea arrived so complete, so polished, it felt alien. John Lennon even confirmed later the tune, the title, Yesterday. It was all just there when Paul woke up.
And it's not just mellow tunes either. What about one of the biggest, most iconic rock riffs ever? Keith Richards and I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Same story, basically. Dream origin. Richards woke up in the middle of the night, had this riff in his head. He had a little cassette recorder by his bed, grabbed it, recorded the riff on acoustic guitar, mumbled the title idea, and apparently just fell straight back asleep.
And the proof?
The proof was on the tape. He listened back the next day, and there were about 2 minutes of the guitar riff, followed by 40 minutes of him snoring.
You can't make that up. Concrete evidence. It really did just happen to him.
Exactly. He felt like a conduit, not the composer in that moment. Which leads nicely into how someone like Tom Waits deals with it. He seems to consciously embrace that external entity idea.
Right. The story about him driving.
Yeah, the famous anecdote. A melody hits him while he's driving on the freeway. Obviously can't write it down. So he supposedly just looks up at the sky and says something like, "Excuse me, can't you see I'm driving? If you're serious, come back later. If not, go bother Leonard Cohen."
That's brilliant. Treating the idea like an actual, slightly inconvenient visitor. It just completely takes the pressure off himself, doesn't it?
It does. If the idea doesn't come back, well, it wasn't his fault. It's a way of externalizing the creative burden, giving the muse its power back, maybe making the whole process feel a bit saner.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. What about writers? It seems like for them, inspiration often showed up, well, frankly, as nightmares. Mary Shelley and Frankenstein is the classic case, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely textbook. She was young, only 18, and part of that famous ghost story challenge during that dark, wet summer in 1816 by Lake Geneva. She was struggling for an idea, apparently quite badly, and then it came, not through plotting, but as this incredibly vivid, terrifying waking dream. She describes seeing it all, the pale student of unhallowed arts, kneeling beside the thing he'd put together, and then seeing the hideous phantasm of a man stir, showing signs of life with this jerky motion.
Chilling. And she knew instantly that was it.
Instantly. She said she woke up completely possessed by the terror of the vision, realizing what terrified me will terrify others. That fear was the seed. She started writing the very next day. The idea chose her through dread.
And Robert Louis Stevenson, similar thing with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The core scene came in a dream.
Yes, the really dramatic transformation scene. It came to him so vividly in a nightmare that his wife heard him crying out in horror and woke him up.
He was furious.
Apparently, yeah. He snapped at her, "Why did you wake me? I was dreaming a fine bogey tale." He was annoyed she'd interrupted the creative download, even though it was terrifying.
Did he have a name for this?
Yeah.
Unconscious part of his mind that did the work?
He did, quite charmingly. He called them his brownies, like little helpful elves working away in his subconscious while he slept, cooking up the stories. Again, that sense of delegation.
And fast forward a bit, J.K. Rowling with Harry Potter.
Mm.
Not a nightmare, but definitely that feeling of an idea just landing.
Right. She was on a delayed train from Manchester to London in 1990, and she said the idea for Harry Potter just fell into my head. Completely out of the blue.
But she couldn't write it down.
That's the kicker. No working pen. She spent the next 4 hours on that train journey just thinking, letting the characters and situations, as she put it, come flooding into her mind. She's been very clear. She has no idea how my imagination works. It just arrived, and her job was then to capture it over years.
Which brings us to the poet Ruth Stone.
Oh.
Her description of catching poems is maybe the most physical,
the
most urgent.
Oh, it's an amazing image. She described poems not as thoughts, but as physical things, like a thunderous train of air barreling across the landscape towards her.
Wow, a train of air.
Yeah. She said she could feel the ground shake, and she knew she had to drop everything and run like hell back to the house to get a pencil and paper before this thing passed her by.
That urgency. Mm. It suggests these ideas are fleeting. You have to be ready.
Absolutely. And sometimes, she said, she'd only just catch the poem by its tail as it rushed past.
And then she'd have to write it backwards.
Exactly. Transcribe it from the last word back to the first, because that's all she caught. I mean, talk about an idea demanding to be recorded, making the writer do gymnastics to get it down.
Okay, this is fascinating across the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But what about fields we think of as purely logical? Science, math, technology. Does this idea having people things show up there too?
It absolutely does. And this is where it gets really interesting for, you know, finding practical insights. Even in disciplines built on rigor, the breakthrough often feels unearned. It arrives after the hard work, but not during it.
Like Auguste Kekulé and the structure of benzene. He'd been working on it for ages, right?
For ages. Completely stuck on how these carbon atoms were arranged. He was immersed in the problem, doing all the logical work.
But the answer didn't come at his desk.
Nope. It came one evening when he was dozing off by the fire. He had this kind of reverie, a daydream. And in it, he saw atoms dancing, forming chains, and then one chain formed a snake that seized its own tail, the Ouroboros.
The ancient symbol.
Right, and he woke up with this sudden flash of intuition. The benzene atoms must form a closed ring. The logic followed the vision, not the other way around.
And you see that same pattern, intense work, then detachment, then insight, with Dmitri Mendeleev and the periodic table?
Exactly the same pattern. Mendeleev had been trying obsessively to find a logical way to organize the known chemical elements. He was exhausted, apparently hadn't slept properly for days trying to crack it. Then he finally fell asleep at his desk, and he later wrote, quite clearly, "I saw in a dream a table where all elements fell into place as required."
Just like
that. He woke up, immediately sketched out the table he'd seen in the dream. He said the task was done, needing only a few minor corrections later. The groundwork was essential, but the subconscious delivered the final insight during rest.
Then there's someone like Srinivasa Ramanujan, the Indian mathematician. His claims were even more direct, weren't they?
Very direct. Ramanujan produced these incredibly complex, profound mathematical formulas, many way ahead of their time, and he attributed them explicitly to divine inspiration. He said his family's goddess, Namajiri, appeared to him in dreams and basically dictated the mathematical content to him.
Wow. He even said, "An equation for me has no meaning unless it expresses a thought of God."
Right. The ideas felt so alien, so advanced, he couldn't conceive of them as purely his own. He had to see them as coming from outside.
And this isn't just historical anecdotes. Look at modern tech. Larry Page and Google.
Yep. The core idea for Google's PageRank algorithm, The breakthrough concept of ranking web pages based on how many other pages link to them apparently came to Larry Page in a dream when he was a grad student at Stanford. He dreamed that he'd somehow managed to download the entire World Wide Web onto his computer, keeping all the link structures intact. That dream image gave him the key insight.
Incredible. And Nikola Tesla, the AC motor visualization.
Another classic example, Tesla reported visualizing the entire alternating current motor, a huge technological leap, in a sudden complete flash of insight while he was just walking in a park reciting poetry. He immediately stopped and drew the diagrams in the sand with a stick. Fully formed.
So all these stories,
yeah,
they seem to point towards a philosophy of the creator being more like a channel, maybe, a vessel. Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to put it. And the choreographer, Martha Graham, articulated this perfectly. She was hugely influential, really demanding, but her core advice to artists was about this process. She wrote about a vitality, a life force, an energy that gets translated through you into action. And crucially, she insisted the artist's job isn't to judge the work while it's coming through. Don't block it with self-criticism. Your job, she said, is simply to keep the channel open.
Keep the channel open. I like that. It removes the ego from the equation again.
It does. And you even see it with someone like the physicist Paul Dirac. Pure logic, quantum mechanics. But when asked how he found his groundbreaking equation...
He didn't say hard work.
He just said, simply, I found it beautiful. The elegance, the mathematical beauty of the solution presented itself to him almost like an aesthetic discovery, not just a calculation.
So bringing this all together, what's the synthesis here? Psychology probably explains it as the subconscious, right?
Oh, absolutely. Modern psychology would frame this as the subconscious mind working diligently on problems in the background, especially after intense conscious effort, and then delivering the solution as an epiphany when the conscious mind relaxes. But the key point for us, for anyone trying to be creative or solve hard problems, is the phenomenology, what it feels like. And consistently, across all these fields, it feels like the idea arrives from elsewhere. Alien. Whole. Unbidden.
Though the process seems to be intense preparation.
Yeah, you've got to do the work. Immerse yourself.
Followed by intentional detachment.
Duck away. Sleep on it. Go for a walk. Let the subconscious cook.
Followed by immediate capture.
Be ready. Like Ruth Stone running for her pencil. Have the notebook, the recorder, whatever you need. Because the idea might not wait.
It really is staggering when you line them all up. A Beatles song, Frankenstein, the periodic table, Google's core algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
All reportedly arriving in this uninvited way.
The pattern is undeniable. And the practical takeaway for you listening is maybe twofold. First, respect the process. Do the hard work. Gather the knowledge. Hone your skills. That's essential. But second, learn to cultivate that openness, that detachment. Respect the mystery of incubation. Trust that your subconscious is working. And crucially, be ready to receive the idea without judgment when it shows up.
It makes you rethink that whole genius thing. Maybe the ancient Greeks had it right in a way. If you see the idea as external, as having your, like we've said,
yeah.
Well, maybe it frees you up to take bigger creative risks. If it's not entirely your fault if it fails, because you're just the messenger, maybe you'll try more ambitious things.
That's a powerful thought. It lowers the stakes on your ego.
So the final question for you to ponder then.
Yeah.
What idea right now might be trying to have you?
Oh.
Are you keeping the channel open?